This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
All right, Cole Kublik joins us now. You hear him right after us on Three Man Front. See him on the SEC Network on ESPN. What's up, Cole? How are you?
Hey, great, Brown. How about yourself?
Doing wonderful. Thanks a lot. I know you are a versatile guy. You watch the NBA. You're not just college football film on the offensive line. That series appears to be over. We had built this series up, and it doesn't look like it's even going to be much of a series.
All right, is that a real thought? You really believe that?
Yeah, I do. You don't?
I don't think it's over. No, I mean, I think Houston ran with them for 3.5 quarters. I think Kevin Durant was unbelievably hot defensively. I don't really know what your answer is for him, but I don't expect Klay Thompson to get 10 or 11 wide open 3-point looks for the rest of the series. You have to make some defensive adjustments. I think Houston needs more movement on offense. I think they'll get Clint Capela involved a little bit more moving forward. I think he was a nice little addition to what they were trying to do offensively and on the defensive end last night, but they need to force the ball inside to him a little bit more, because I think that's probably a bit of a matchup issue for Golden State. But Houston has the firepower to be able to run with Golden State. And I thought there were a lot of mid-range looks, like looks in the paint, looks from 5 to 7 feet that Houston just didn't capitalize on. There were a couple drives to the rim that Houston didn't capitalize on. I thought Golden State had a great offensive night. Houston as a team had an okay offensive night. Golden State played better defense. And if Houston doesn't play better defense, it's not going to go 6 or 7. But I don't think it's over by any stretch of the imagination. We love to sort of jump the gun. And that's why I really, really loved LeBron's quote the other night about, "I didn't go to college, man. This isn't the NCAA tournament." Like, we as college football diehards and as football diehards, we sometimes, I think, struggle to understand the concept of a series and how the mentality is different in a series. Like, we threw it out last night. So if Georgia and Alabama were to play a 7-game series for the national championship, how many games does Georgia win? But just think about everything that begins to go into that. Does Tua start game 2? How long does it take for Tua to start? What if Tua gets more reps with the ones and the receivers get more reps with the ones? Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker, how do they adjust their defense? Is Jonah Williams available in game 2? How does that change your philosophy? You look at a guy like Jim Chaney calling the plays for Georgia, who's known for being as versatile as anybody in the country of just switching up just his run game from week to week. How different could Georgia's game plan be from game 1 to game 2? So I just don't think we truly understand the concept of a series sometimes. We get so caught up in just individual games. But I'm not ready to say that Houston, the best team in the NBA during the regular season, the team that won the regular season during Golden State, I know we can talk about who was in and who was out of the lineup in those games, and the team that the only other team that scored like Golden State scored during the regular season is done because of one game.
That's your opinion.
Well, you mentioned mentality, and I think that's the problem, Cole, because I don't know if – and LeBron, look, this is a guy that's been through it, and this is a guy that's won championships. James Harden and Chris Paul haven't. On the other side, Golden State has – and when you play 82 games to get home court, and then it's taken away in 48 minutes, and you're really dominated in that second half, mentally, I just don't know where Houston's going to be moving forward.
Yeah, I'm not going to – Chris Paul's a dog, man. I'm not going to sit here and say that I think Chris Paul is mentally weak to the point that he can't bounce back and go have another good game. And same thing with James Harden. We've seen James Harden's demeanor. Does it really look like anything ever really bothers him? I mean, I don't – these are professional athletes, Lance. I understand as a team, as a group, as a unit, under expectations, how to play, how to handle yourself, how to compose yourself. Golden State's going to have the advantage from top to bottom. But I'm not going to jump the gun and say, oh, this is going to be a sweep. Houston has no chance just because of one game. Things can happen. Things can be very different. Guys can be hot or cold again on both sides. So I just don't think that the series is over by any stretch of the imagination.
Five After with Cole Kublik of the SEC Network and Three Man Front here on WJOX around the state of Alabama on the Jocks Network. Let's talk football. Nobody's been more in the free agent market this offseason than LSU. They've got a defensive end and a wide receiver and a graduate transfer. They're in the mix for they also got a cornerback in Terrence Alexander. They're in the mix for Joe Burrow. Is LSU the most unknown fringe contender in the Southeastern Conference?
I don't really believe that they're a contender, and I think even if they added Joe Burrow, my opinion's not really going to change. I mean, they've got a solid defensive tackle from Texas Tech that's going to be a good player as well, Jim, that's going to be a transfer and it'll be sort of a new face. But this is – I don't really think this is LSU. I think this is sort of the norm. I mean, go back and look at that Auburn team last year and Casey Dunn at center. People forget Darius James was a Texas transfer. Austin Golson was an Ole Miss transfer. Jared Stidham, Baylor transfer. I mean, there were times when Auburn would snap the ball and you had five guys inside the tackle box that were transfers. So this is sort of what college football has become. LSU is just taking advantage of what's out there. And if they can go get guys who they think can come in, I mean, Danny Etling started a quarterback last year. He was a transfer. But I do think that if they're going to realistically contend, there's going to have to be guys that are added to give them more stability and more consistency at certain positions. The unknowns for LSU, I think, are a little bit more frustrating than what we're used to. We've seen LSU have really good, maybe borderline dominant offensive lines in the past. We know that they've always had a thoroughbred tailback. We don't really know that this year coming back. They got some good tight ends. I think the receiver position is very underrated for LSU. And they have a couple quarterbacks that seem to have talent, but we don't really know if they have a guy that's going to be able to make plays, that's going to be able to deliver the football consistently. And then on top of that, there's the unknown of what is the offense going to look like. How are they going to direct this offense? Is it going to be fast? Is it going to be multiple? Is it going to be more pro style? We don't really know exactly what to expect from this offense, even though we saw it from Steve Ensminger a little bit late in the year 2 years ago when he sort of took the reins. We really don't know week in, week out from an adjustment standpoint what this offense is going to look like, and I think that just brings more doubt.
Cole Kubelik with us on the Mick Ultra Pure Gold Hotline. You'll hear him right after us on Three Man Front. Also see him on the SEC Network and ESPN. Jim asked us to build the best coaching staff we could build yesterday with coordinators, offensive and defensive. The defensive was an interesting discussion. This is from the SEC. Was it Saturday Down South, Dunaway, that
did
this?
It was a Saturday Down South story.
So when we got the offensive, it was tough, and Saturday Down South went Jim Chaney, which I laughed at. But then the more I thought about it, like Lance said, who you gonna pick? So if you picked an offensive coordinator, Cole, who would it be?
Put me in a little bit of a bad spot there. But
why? Why is that a bad spot? Because you're on the SEC network?
I'll say this. I'm a big fan of Jim Chaney.
Yeah.
And I don't think fans have a real appreciation of, and I've talked to other defensive staff members, coordinators, position coaches, that talk about how versatile he is just in his run game and how he switches up their run game from week to week. I mean, I'll see him do something in week two, and I won't see it the rest of the year. And then I'll see them make a living off something for three or four consecutive weeks, and then it completely goes away. And I think you have to go back and look at what he did to Kevin Steele's defense in the SEC championship game, and just an absolute onslaught of the perimeter of that defense. Made that defense run, forced that defense not to be able to jam the middle of the line of scrimmage, and it worked, and it was successful. And a good coach to me is somebody who learns from their mistakes. And I think he saw what he did the first time around against Auburn. I'm not making those mistakes again. I'm going to adjust. I'm going to give my guys a better chance to go out and make plays and be successful. And they did it, and it did work. It was successful. And then I think, too, I don't think people really understand exactly how much that offense changed when Jacob Eason went out. I think people just sort of see that offense and they say, well, Jake Fromm came in. He was just able to do some more things. And, you know, he was just a better fit for that offense. That offense morphed and changed dramatically when Jake Fromm in. The RPO was not a real part of that offense, at least not an in-depth part of that offense, when Jacob Eason was there. They were going to be a very deep play action, take multiple shots down the field type offense off of what was probably going to be a good run game. And they altered that. And Jake Fromm comes in, and now all of a sudden it's quick ball distribution, it's more RPOs, it's getting the ball out on the perimeter, and finding different ways to utilize their backs in space, and it became a totally different offense. And then to be able to insert and remove certain pieces of your offense, I mean, look at Ben Cleveland, who was put in after the Auburn game, starts two regular season games in the SEC championship game, and he sort of changed the mentality of that offensive line. So Jim Chaney would absolutely have to be towards the top of the list. I'll just say this. You could not go wrong if he was your first choice, or if you're building a coaching staff dream team. You couldn't go wrong having Jim Chaney as your OC. And by the way, I'd probably take his offensive line coach there. And I think most other offensive line coaches in the league, if you ask them, would take Sam Pittman as well.
Okay, Cole, I'm going to put the number at 1.5. Current coaches at their programs in the SEC – that have never been to the SEC championship game. How many get there? Over, under 1.5. And you tell me who they are.
At their current spot.
At their current spot that have never been. So obviously you got to take Kirby Smart, Gus Malzahn, and Nick Saban out of the equation. You got 11 to choose from. I'm putting the over under at 1.5. Would you go over? Would you go under? And if so, what would those coaches be?
It's over. Dan Mullen at Florida is getting there. I've already told you guys I think he's going to win a national championship.
I agree with you.
Yeah,
on this.
We agree. Yep. And that's why I put it at 1.5. I would go under.
So, but I think you also, I mean, let's look at some other teams that have snuck in. Like, do I think that, I mean, would I go over to Mississippi when this whole thing becomes legal and put a bunch of money on Will Muschamp getting there at some point in time? Probably not, but I do think it's very possible that he gets there at some point. And I think when you look at Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State, once Nick Saban walks away, if he's still there, he's got a chance to get there. I think there's other guys that are doing enough things.
Jimbo Fisher at Texas.
In the right direction.
Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, yeah.
Yeah. So, I think we've seen Mississippi State sneak in. We've seen South Carolina sneak in. All it takes is if a league is dominated by, you know, if it's a one-team dominant division and that team has a down year, I could see Will Muschamp getting South Carolina. I could see Joe Moorhead or Jimbo Fisher getting Texas A&M or Mississippi State there. So I would definitely go over.
Yeah, I'd go over, too. I'd go, too. You?
I mean, I think Mullen's almost a given.
Yeah, Mullen is a given, I think. And then it's, you know, two or one or two is the number. I would not go over two. Would you guys go over two?
I don't think I'd go over two. And I don't even know who my second would be.
Yeah, you give me 2.5 on this, and it's probably an under.
It's an under. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Before you go, and we're about to talk about this next segment, but Kirby Smart, Jimbo Fisher, and Jeremy Pruitt all coached under Nick Saban. The first one to beat Nick Saban, and how many years, how many chances do they get?
Kirby.
That's the tricky part with Kirby.
Yeah, you don't know when Kirby plays him again.
Yep.
Exactly, and that's, I mean, he got him in the playoff, and we would have, if we would have thrown that out, we would have probably said it was going to be in Atlanta in the SEC championship game. So we all assume that they're going to meet there this year, and Kirby will get his shot there this year. It's not a lot. But the other part is, you know, Jimbo's going to get him every year. Jeremy's going to get him every year. Jeremy's not anywhere near ready to compete against that team on an annual basis. I don't care what it means. I don't care how many Twitter accounts are out there that tell you how many thousand days it's been since Tennessee beat Alabama. They are not anywhere near close from a roster perspective. Coaching aside, the roster in Knoxville is not anywhere near ready to compete with that team on an annual basis. I'll go Kirby Smart, and I realize that's taking a bit of a flyer by saying, well, there a lot of things still sort of have to happen for them to even see each other. They saw each other last year. I think they'll see each other this year in Atlanta. But Jimbo is sort of the fly in the ointment. It's weird that you brought him up earlier in that discussion, Jim, because nobody really seems to be talking to them about them as a legitimate contender this year or any for many years to come, even though they've already given him a national championship of the future plaque? Like,
that's right.
Going to happen at some point in time. I don't know if he gets a national title, but I could definitely see him winning the West one year. I think that could potentially happen, and I think that he's probably the guy that – we're not paying enough attention to based on what they already have, the staff that he has in place and how they're going to be able to recruit. I mean, he's got Tim Brewster. He's got Damian Craig. He still has Terry Price. He's got guys who can go get players. They understand how to recruit. They know the league. And obviously they should be able to win some battles in Texas. I think Jimbo's going to have more success than a lot of people believe, but I just have to go Kirby right now because he has that program. He checks off so many boxes of having his program in a spot to be competitive for a national title every single year already.
Where college football never ends.
The kick is good! Auburn wins! 22-19! The Auburn Tigers are on top of the college football world.
The Jocks Roundtable with LT, Dunaway, and Brown.